You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid. Where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for joining us. Beautiful day today. Hope you got to a farmer's market. I could not even find a parking place at the Sebastopol Market. People were so happy to see the sun out. And it was just a lovely day. Great day up at the Cloverdale Citrus Fair as well. Really a nice crowd when I did my cooking demonstration of four different salad dressings using citrus. You know, how appropriate was that? Tonight we're going to take on a really difficult, heart-wrenching issue that everywhere I go, everywhere I've gone for the last week, people are talking about it. And that's the situation with Rancho Feed Corporation down in Petaluma. There's been a USDA recall of, I think, 8.7 million pounds of beef. It's controversial. It's devastating. And from my point of view, as both a consumer and an advocate for local products, it seems, wow, just when ranchers are, when we're really getting our footing, we've got local butcher shops opening up, we've got Victorian Farbstead Meats with a brick-and-mortar location in Sebastopol at the community market, when people who sell at the farmers markets really have a great customer base. Here we come along, and there's no place to process the animals with this closure. So we've got a full house. I'm going to introduce those people in just a minute, but to sort of start things out and frame what's happened in, say, the last week, 10 days or so, I have, returning to Mouthful for at least the third time, Leslie Braben from Salmon Creek Ranch. Her letter today was, I think it was today and not yesterday, was letter of the day in the the Press Democrat. Leslie, welcome to Mouthful.
Thank you.
What is going on? Or maybe I should say, what happened?
Basically, what happened was the USDA forced Rancho Feed into a voluntary recall of all the meat produced, processed by Rancho during 2013. And approximately 75% of Rancho's business is with cull cows from the local dairies, and 25% is from local ranchers, small ranchers who do grass-fed beef, who bring 2, 4, 6 cows there for processing. All of it has been labeled by the USDA as unhealthy and unfit for human consumption, which is absolutely appalling.
And my understanding is they won't give a reason.
As yet, they have not given a reason. I spoke with an official from Rancho on Friday. He still does not know why this has happened. He said the USDA gave them 20 minutes to come up to do a conference call and basically gave them a choice of having a voluntary recall or a suspension. And the terms of the suspension were far more severe, so they opted for the voluntary recall. Mm-hmm. And apparently Rancho hired a lawyer, went to the USDA, and made a case for exempting the 25% of their business that was the custom slaughter, mm-hmm. which is the small ranchers, and the USDA refused, even though in the 20 years that my source had been employed by Rancho, not one custom slaughter animal had been condemned by the USDA. So it's very, very mysterious why this is happening. Nobody knows. No one has gotten sick. Even the USDA admits that.
Right, yeah, that's been
and over, unlike any other recall in the history of recalls in this state, no one has gotten sick.
Whenever there's recalls, you know, they recall cantaloupes because they're contaminated with E. coli. And when the recall is issued, you know right away. So that's odd. One question before I introduce our other guests. Coal cows from the dairy industry. I'm surprised. I didn't realize that was such a major proportion. What happens with those animals? What happens with that?
My understanding, and Adam, you may be more up to date with what happens with them, but basically they're turned into hamburger.
Oh. That's McDonald's hamburger.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so
these are cows that at the end of their productive lives.
Productive lives, right. Okay, so Adam, that's the voice you just heard, Adam Parks of Victorian Farmstead Meats. We also have Aaron Lusich. Did I say that right, Aaron?
Yes, you did.
And you have a new business that you're going to tell us about. We have Susan Brady. Do I have it right? You're the manager of Freestone Ranch?
Yes.
Great. Well, welcome to Mouthful. What I want to focus on tonight is how it impacts, how is it going to impact our thriving industry up here of, you know, the kind of meats that people who care about what they eat are eating. You know, I don't want to get commodity beef. I want to get beef from you or you. You know, I want to get healthy beef that's had a happy life, living in a non-stressful environment. You know, that's been handled properly as close to me as possible. So, what's happening? Jump on in.
Well, this whole issue is forcing us to make some pretty hard choices because, small farmers approach selling beef in different ways. Some people will sell cow shares. You can take up to a quarter of an animal and sell it to four different people. Well, four different people, one animal. And that follows a different set of rules and procedures than mm-hmm. if you were selling specific cuts like you would get
right.
at Safeway.
Yeah, cow share means like you buy a quarter.
You basically buy the live animal from the farmer mm-hmm. and what you do with it, who cuts it up after that is their business.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Whereas if I want to sell retail cuts, which is what we do, a New York steak, mm-hmm. Whatever. We have to have that butchered by, the animal has to be slaughtered by a USDA certified slaughter facility, which mm-hmm. Rancho was, and it has to be butchered by a USDA certified butcher.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's important to make the distinction that there's there's two aspects of slaughter of butchering mm-hmm. and that's the kill process mm-hmm. and then the fabrication process mm-hmm. and I'm the new guy on the block. I'll be finishing my first animals this summer mm-hmm. so I haven't
and
harvested.
Where are things located?
I'm up on Pepperwood. I'm in a partnership with Pepperwood Preserve, which is
Pepperwood Preserve.
So I graze their land mm-hmm. for the benefit of the land and then I get the land.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I haven't used Rancho yet, but I've for a long time consumed products that come mm-hmm. through Rancho. But just to clarify with you guys that do, Rancho is not a fabrication facility.
Correct. They're
right?
slaughter only.
Yeah, just right.
Slaughter.
They're slaughter only. So you have to get the perspective that that they don't have the benefit of that diversified kind of revenue stream mm-hmm. where they do the additional fabrication, which is the majority of the revenue in the slaughter process.
And the fabrication was person not in the industry might call that the butchering, the breaking down of the animal.
Absolutely.
The cut and wrap.
Cut and wrap. There we go.
Yeah.
Right on, Susan.
So you're talking about a business that has very tight margins to begin with. Mm-hmm. And definitely cut and wrap facility has is a much easier facility to put up. It's yeah. Are you
You're right. I mean, could we build another facility in this county? Not anytime soon, and not easily.
Yeah.
Any future processing that we have in the near future is going to depend on somebody taking over Rancho. A couple points of clarification. I've done a ton of late night research on this over the last 5 or 6 days. When we talk about the mystery of this whole situation, one thing that really stuck in my mind was two things. When you look at the fact that the OIG or the Office of the Inspector General is involved, their task, if you go to their website, their main function is as internal affairs for the USDA. And so that says to me that when they come in, they're not investigating Rancho, and I'm not saying that Rancho's clean and all this, but they're investigating the USDA employees that were working there.
Right.
So that, coupled with the fact that the press release from the USDA states that the carcasses that went out were stamped, the USDA employees are the only ones that have access to that stamp, in theory. They're under lock and key, and in theory, Rancho employees don't have access to those stamps. So if they went out improperly stamped, that's on the USDA employees. I'm not saying that anybody's clean in this.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is that issue makes it a much, much bigger ballgame for this to go away. And so we as ranchers and procurers and purveyors need to understand that it's going to be a while. And so what do we do to fix it? Personally, I'm looking at this as a huge opportunity. When you talked about the farmers markets and the people that come there and are angry and in support, those aren't our audience. That's our customers. Those are the people that sure. trust us no matter what happens. We can prove our meat's clean. We tag every animal, and that tag follows that animal all the way from the time it's walking into the slaughter facility until it comes out as a carcass, until it gets to Golden Gate or whatever further processing place we use. And that's how we can prove that our meat's clean. That's why we could make the argument to the USDA, successful or not, that we should be exempt. I think going forward, this is a great opportunity for us as a community, as a ranching community and a meat community, to go out to the general public and say, yeah, it's an outrage. Yeah, it's scary. But you know what? We have a solution. We are the solution. And we can back it up. We can prove it. That's the tact.
Now, do you mean we can prove that therefore we should get an exemption? Or that
No. I'm not talking about the past.
Okay,
I'm talking about, you know, my wife doesn't want to buy fish anymore because of the radiation fears mm-hmm. and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not paranoid people. We're not conspiracy theorists necessarily. But people out there are scared. Mm-hmm. 8.7 million, as stupid as it is, of that 8.7 million pounds, there might be a couple hundred thousand pounds that even exist anymore.
Yeah.
And not a single ounce was tainted. But it's a big, scary number. It makes mm-hmm. great headlines. It clearly has got everybody in an uproar. So on that level, it was successful. An abundance of caution, I think, was the phrase they used. Well, you know, it's just a splash in the headlines. But the fact is that fear that they've mongered now gives us the opportunity to mm-hmm. say, hey, here's your alternative.
But now I understand. But you know what? I want to take a real quick musical break because I want to fix the microphone. We'll be right back here on Mouthful.
Cancel though I
It is a lively conversation here on Mouthful. If you would like to join in with all these guests, it's just not possible to take your phone calls. But if you are Facebook savvy, you can go to Facebook, you can go to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, and you can ask a question there on the page. Anyone can post, and Mike, Mouthful's awesome engineer, is monitoring that, and he will pass any question on to us, and we can put it on the air. So there you go. That's how you join in, Facebook/Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. I wish I could do it in a different way. And someday, KRCB will be sophisticated enough to do that. In the meantime, we ended up with, we concluded with Adam talking about a number of things, and I know that Susan and Leslie both want to jump in here. I'm going to take you first, Leslie.
Adam, I am appalled about what you just said, that it's, I knew that the investigation had originated from Washington, but that what you're telling us is that it looks more like an internal investigation of the USDA employees.
All I can tell you is that when they said the OIG was involved, I had no idea what they did. And so I Googled them, and when you go to their website, the first task is to I didn't bring the verbiage on it, but yeah. Basically they act as internal affairs, and I confirmed that with two USDA employees.
I think it's important for listeners to understand also that the USDA has an office on site at any facility that's a USDA facility,
right,
staffed by employees that are paid by the USDA, tasked with inspecting. That's what they do. They inspect. And they are not employees of the facility. They are employees of the USDA. So a failure of inspection is a failure of the USDA process. And yet, the USDA had the gall to label in the newspaper and in their press releases that our beef that we took to Rancho ourselves, unloaded ourselves, saw being unloaded, that were healthy, completely healthy cows, they have cast aspersions on our businesses and on our products, which is completely false. I find that akin to a communist country. And I know there's factions in this community who do not want to speak up. They want to find out the facts first. But meanwhile, it's our customers who are reading these bogus lies that the USDA has put out, and I am totally appalled. You know, it was, you look at history, you look at Nazi Germany, there was wrongdoing and people didn't want to speak up. I think that is just disgusting.
So, Leslie, I think that, as Adam said, we can use this as an opportunity to share how we do things. I saw a short interview on the Press Democrat. I was just looking around before I came here this evening, and an older gentleman commented that he wants to get back to the integrity and the way it used to be when he was served meat at his own family home. And so the point for us is that that's the way we do it. I chauffeur my steers to Rancho, and I would much rather just chauffeur them to a nice, quiet corral and have them harvested on our own facility, what we used to do to be able to sell quarters, halves, and whole animals. And I understand to do cuts, we need to do USDA, but I'd rather watch my animals that I have cared for and taken, you know, every day of their lives seriously, chauffeured to a nice facility where it's, you know, really close. And Rancho was 20 minutes away from our ranch and really close. And it felt like a really good way to do it. It was on Thursdays, the only day that they harvested custom meat. You knew that you got your meat was what was off and running and advertised for you and to the cut and wrap facility at Golden Gate. And I think that's the most important point, is what can we do to find someone who takes over that small market? Pigs on Monday, beef on Thursdays, and how can we expand to reach enough of the public to create a business out of that harvesting?
Excellent point.
Right now, before that happens, like right now, I know, Aaron, you're going to start harvesting in the summer. Mm-hmm. You have, you know, customers, you know, Adam, all the time. What are your options right now? What do you have to do? Do you have to go to Modesto, Sacramento?
The closest option is 2.5 hours away, one way for the animals to travel.
And that's really stressful for the animal, right?
Absolutely. It is, mostly because grass-fed animals, they're not shuttled around in trailers regularly. A lot of them, I know some of my animals are raised in Covelo, so they've had one trailer ride in their 22 months of life. And it came to, you know, paradise in Valley Ford and lots of green pastures. And so, you know, to take them again is a little less stressful because hopefully they remember, but probably not. Mm-hmm. But it is stressful because they're going somewhere, they're smelling strange things. And, you know, and all of us who have small businesses, we're only carrying 2, 3, 4 animals at a time. And they're herd animals. To be separated from their herd alone is a stress.
And then you look at the carbon footprint on top of that. You're using more gas, and it takes a lot of gas to move that. You know, you're pulling a livestock trailer. Each animal weighs, you know, in the neighborhood of 1,000 pounds or more. That's a lot of carbon emissions that we're dealing
with. You can't do that with a Prius.
Yeah.
No. So those of you who are out there in the audience and you look disdainfully at my SUV, think about where your food is coming from.
Yeah.
And what happens? I mean, here, when you take your animals to Rancho, you've got Golden Gate for the cut and wrap. But you're down in Modesto. Then what happens? Do you have to truck it back up here?
We are not allowed to truck it up here ourselves. Because if you want to keep in, I call it the chain of evidence, you have the animal slaughtered at a USDA slaughter facility. Then it must also be butchered by a USDA butcher. You cannot take the animal from the slaughter facility to the butcher facility in your vehicle. It has to be in an approved vehicle. So, for instance, when I have not been able to get into Golden Gate, because Golden Gate in Santa Rosa is very, very busy, and during certain times of the year, it's 2 or 3 months before you can get an appointment for a small person like myself. Wow. And so we were using a USDA butcher in Esparto, which is about 2 hours from here. It was costing $150 to get those steers from one steer, $150 extra to go from Rancho in the approved vehicle to Esparto. So that we, as a rancher, you either do you absorb that cost or you have to pass it on to the consumer.
Sure.
And then I have to go up to Esparto, 2 hours north, and pick up the meat once it's wrapped.
Right. Now, are there any requirements for labeling? If I have it right, with wine, once the wine is pressed and before it's bottled, if you take it out of the appellation and then bring it back in, you can't label it from that appellation?
The regulations are pretty clear. It's just the whole way through, unless you have your own state-inspected facility, state-inspected butcher shop, then it needs to have a USDA, what we call a BUG, which is the little USDA stamp that has the establishment number on it.
Uh-huh.
But
you can say it's from Sonoma County, it's from Valley Forge, even
you
if
you say anything you want. There's no.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's.
Okay.
I think a couple points to Leslie's discussion about the travel of the meat is one of the things that we're going to need to do as a community is I called it the other day, cowpooling. Is we're going to need to, you know, have a Yahoo group or a website or whatever it is where people can get together and say, hey, I'm taking a stock trailer, I got 4 spots to this facility. And then we had a meeting with a number of producers the other day and talking about you know, getting stuff back from using a common processor, a common slaughter facility, so that we can get the carcasses back in the least amount of money and time and effort available. And I think that over the next couple of weeks, we'll find that that piece of it is it's not easy. It's not great. I didn't get into this business to be a logistics officer, but it's going to take a little effort on everybody's part in terms of passing it on to the consumer. Everything gets passed on to the consumer at some point or another. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm not going to raise prices over it from my standpoint. And the reason for that is because I use enough animals that I can spread it. When you're a producer that does a couple of animals a quarter, that's a big chunk.
Yeah.
And so it's on every producer out there, every farmer out there to get creative because there isn't an option. So it's not worth worrying about why is it. It's how do we deal with it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, this community has always rallied together in whatever time of crisis we've had, whether, you know, it was the dairy cow problem in the, what it was, the late 80s or whatever, and everybody got together and killed off all their dairy cows for money. All these kind of things binds people together. And so this is an opportunity for us small beef producers to get together and come up with a creative solution. And they're out there. I think that what Susan was talking about, what I was talking about earlier, is the idea that we can track, that we, as Susan put it, chauffeur our meat through the process, the whole process, mm-hmm. that's the comfort level that our consumers can trust.
Mm-hmm. Now, the recall has been for beef. Am I right?
Yes.
But the shutdown, the plant itself is shut down, correct?
Yep.
So that affects pork? Anything else?
Nope. No. No.
So pork and beef.
Pork and beef.
So this doesn't have an impact on the local lamb and goat industry.
No.
Where do they go?
There's two places.
Okay.
You could either go to Occidental.
Panazera, right?
But he's getting ready to retire from mm-hmm. what I understand.
Yeah.
And in fact, Rancho was going to take over the sheep and goat operation.
Out there or move it to Petaluma?
Move it to Petaluma. Okay. And your other option is Dixon, okay, which is an hour and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, so Panazera is the last.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I used to go out there and pick up lamb's tongue when Bruce Campbell was there on Tuesdays. So I knew Panazera. That's too bad. So it's too bad that he's not going to have someone take over out
Maybe
there.
Maybe he is. Do you know anything?
No, I mean, it's Tommy Mazzoni is the guy out there that mm-hmm. handles the goats and lambs. And you know, John Taylor would tell you the same thing. I mean, it's a tough business, mm-hmm. and there's not a lot of money to be made at it. And it's, you know, there's certainly nothing glamorous. I laugh because people talk about the pictures that are in the paper of Rancho facility and the cows sitting out there and the dirty corrals and stuff. And they're, oh, it looks so depressing. It looks so dirty. It's a slaughter facility. Of course it looks depressing and dirty.
Yeah.
You know, what you think they plant flowers out in front? It's people's perception is what we need to change as a group.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, you're giving us a great opportunity to start the ball rolling, but I think it needs to resonate as, you know, farther than this reach. And that's what, you mm-hmm. know, we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. That I think that's part of the opportunity, too. I mean, you're talking about, it's a pretty legacy business.
Mm-hmm.
The percentage of business that is custom now, that hasn't been happening at the scale
mm-hmm.
that it is for a long time. And yeah. if anybody remembers what Petaluma was like 30, 40 years ago, it's probably not – they don't make more to kill your cow or a cull dairy cow. And the cull dairy cow is probably a lot easier to deal with than somebody – the Nymans supervise the killing of all of their animals.
Mm-hmm. Now, do the Nymans use?
Yes,
they do.
Oh, they do.
Yeah.
They do.
So I talked to Nicolette at length, and you know they have a significant amount of inventory that mm-hmm. they're
going to have to dump.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then these bills are being presented to Rancho, and it's completely ruined them.
Oh, so that the ranchers that have to get rid of meat then are billing.
Yeah,
is this
Some
something?
Of them
are people typically insured?
No,
you're not insured against recall.
No.
Oh, I was hoping y'all were.
No, and then with the reimbursement rate, Susan, you probably know this better than anybody, is not what you would be getting if you were able to sell your
animals. Yeah, were reimbursed for the four animals we lost that I delivered on January 9th.
Oh.
And, you know, we accepted it because we want to help keep Rancho in business. Mm-hmm. However, it was certainly not what I would have.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we're not even claiming
from my customers.
We're not even claiming reimbursement, and I've had no requests from customers for bringing meat back. I told the USDA if they wanted it back, I would come and throw up on their boardroom because it was all eaten.
I haven't had any customers want to return.
Except I think it's digested.
Yeah, but we're complying.
What about you, Adam? You have the new butcher,
mm-hmm.
butchery at Community Market. Have you had anyone bring anything back?
Not an ounce. Yeah. I've got countless emails from people that you can't have it back. You know, you'll get mixed messages. The woman that I spoke with that called me from the USDA was very pleasant. I've heard horror stories of other people that were treated very rudely. It's just like anything else. I mean, you're going to get different people from different walks
sure.
of life that treat it differently. That's not the issue. The recall thing is going to go away very quickly. We're all going to take – I know I'm complying wholeheartedly because I don't want to give the USDA any reason to come knocking on my door.
Mm-hmm. But I think it is an issue, Adam, that the government, the USDA, can come and blatantly lie about our businesses, our products. And the USDA called us and wanted our customer list. I said, no way on – no
way. That shocks me.
Yes.
That shocks me.
Well, actually, yes – it was shocking. 8 o'clock in the morning on Thursday. It happened to be my birthday, and that was like the first call I got. And she goes, this perky female voice going, oh, yes, we would like your customer. I'm going, no way in hell. There's no way I'm releasing any information to you, ever. I promised those people that I would never give their information to a third party, and I'm not going to do it. Arrest me.
Because why did they want to contact them?
Yes.
The only contact that we received was from a very nice gentleman. He was really polite, from the FSIC, the food safety. Uh-huh. And he sent us a Excel spreadsheet that we filled out, and they were not interested in the end consumer. They were only interested in our meat that was still left at markets. See, and we do not have any now as a result of the recall left.
Right.
See, that's
on the shelves at markets.
Why did you get that? We never got that.
Well,
and
Leslie, you
got
the reason. I can explain.
Okay.
So, Susan wholesales.
And, we don't wholesale.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So the person that called you and asked for your customer list, they assumed because you got beef from Golden Gate that you wholesaled. So I think what happened was just a miscommunication because they're not going to ask for your end user. They're going to ask for any – like for me, I do both. So I need to give them a list of anybody that I wholesaled beef to and recall my stuff from 2013 if there's any out there. But they're not going to ask for my customer list. I voluntarily am going to send a notice out to my customers just so that I say, if you have anything from 2013 and this is a concern for you, please call me. I'll happily reimburse you for it. Take it back.
But this miscommunication and misunderstanding on the part of the USDA seems to be a huge factor here, that because they don't understand what actually is occurring, they're blackballing our businesses.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem,
I guess we don't
understand what's going on.
I'm
and
appalled.
What really is going on that we are not privy to. And that, I mean, I think that's the biggest problem, that, you know, I don't think any of our customers are questioning our integrity or our meat, but we are still in the dark about what is really going on.
I've spoken to several of our elected officials lately in the last few days, and they have called Washington on our behalf, and they're not being told the reason either.
But see, so let me kind of put this in perspective for a second, and I'm not here in support of the USDA. The USDA to me is a necessary evil, and I do everything I can to comply every step of the way with them because I don't need any more headaches in this business than I already have. When a cantaloupe gets recalled for E. coli, you are dealing with a grower, a packer, and a grocery store. End of story. When you have the only meat recall of this type in the last 5 years, I looked at every single recall that's happened over the last 5 years. This has never happened. I don't know anything past 5 years, whether it happened before then, but this is the only one of this magnitude, of any magnitude, that has been done without reason. When you look at all the reasons for the different recalls, there's one that has the same explanation as this, and it was in Texas. It was 251 pounds of chicken that was recalled because there was confusion with the inspectors over coverage on a federal holiday.
251 pounds?
Yeah. So what I'm saying is this is a new ball game. I believe it's a new ball game for the USDA employees as well, because they're used to dealing with farmer, grower, packer, grocery store, end of story. What we have here is we have farmer, processor, further processing, wholesaling to restaurants, wholesaling to you who does farmers markets, wholesaling to me who does CSA, farmers markets, restaurants, and grocery stores. So there's going to be some level of confusion by all of us. And I think what Susan said is pretty much right on the head is if we go about it and just get through the recall process, whether it's turning in your meat or if you don't want to turn in your meat, don't turn in your meat. But the sooner you get through the recall portion of this, the sooner that as a business, we can get to proving what we do.
So the USDA gets gets to get through this scot-free. They don't have to justify their actions to us. They don't have to say they're sorry that they lied about our products. That because they're the government, they're okay?
No, I don't think that's the case at all. But at the same time, I don't care what they say about my product.
Well, I do.
But here's the thing. What I want to do, again, I'm kind of using this as an opportunity as opposed to a punishment. I've got your customers aren't worried about what the USDA says. I haven't had a single customer come up to me and go, can you explain how your meat's unaffected by this? Everybody's come up and said this is a bunch of crap.
Yeah.
Why are you being put through this?
Yeah.
So that's in support of me. So I'm not concerned. What I am concerned with is going out to the mass public that is concerned about this, has no idea who I am or what my meat is all about, and going and teaching them that here's your safe alternative. Because if we as a group tilt at windmills with the USDA and try to fight this battle or get an apology, I don't have time for that battle.
No, I understand that, and I think that's a really valid point. But I also feel that without repercussions to the USDA over this blatant abuse of power, they'll just turn around and do it to some other group of farmers.
I want to interject something here, for a question as an outsider who pays attention. A couple years ago, maybe, there were a lot of regulations that came smashing down onto small farmers, and it had not ranchers. It had to do with you couldn't have volunteer labor anymore. There were a bunch of things like that. And I think there was some uproar specifically in California that wanted to exempt small farms. So what I'm wondering is the situation of successful small ranching, viable ranching on the scale that each of you do here, is this like so off the radar of the USDA that they don't really know what they're dealing with?
I think it's possible? Interesting. I hear what you're saying, but I came to this whole thing as a filmmaker, as somebody who was trying to learn about the food system, and then I got swallowed by the food system.
No pun intended.
By the food system.
Pun intended. But this is no. This is just the first time it's hit West Marin County and the kind of North Bay food scene. If you were an Amish raw milk producer in Pennsylvania, you would know about the FDA really well.
Hey, or a raw milk producer in Los Angeles.
Or
that's true.
Or Manna Storehouse, a private co-op selling, you know, bulk food out of their farms.
So is that a good parallel, that situation?
It's not. It's a different thing, but the intersection's the same.
Okay. Yeah.
So what it is we have two food systems. Food safety is really designed for the large food system.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need is I'm not saying we need exemptions, but we need to have right-sized regulations for different types of farming, and that's what we don't have.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Michelle Obama advocating organic agriculture, and then you have the entire system really kind of marching lockstep behind agribusiness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's economics.
Yeah. You have on one hand, you have Monsanto and Archer Daniel Midland and Cargill.
Sure.
And then on
and
the
IBP
other hand,
and yeah. Yeah, name
and,
it. And, that's,
and then you have like 30 meat producers in Sonoma and Marin who go to farmers markets and in, you know, small local groceries.
Yeah. I mean, the unfortunate from a public relations standpoint for our unorganized, you know, fledgling food system, the unfortunate thing is people are not surprised to read a headline that says 8.7
right.
million pounds of beef are recalled. It's just that's, you know, less than a week worth of production for a big, big processor out there. And we're talking about an entire year.
Yeah. And just for reference sake, in 2010, Harris Ranch processed 150 million pounds of beef. And there's been a lot of comments on the Rancho thing about, well, is that a year's production or what is it? That is a year's production. That's every piece of beef that went through that place over the course of a year. So it's a very small facility.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a facility that was in an agricultural town that is now surrounded by really nice loft apartments and shops. And so there, that business is unaffected by the economic shift in that community, other than the amount of economic pressure on it to survive there.
Sure.
So I think that for me, I think, because I've looked at this processing thing, I spent some time with Mike Lawrence in Cannon Falls, Minnesota, and he's the Lawrence Meats is the glass abattoir in Michael Pollan's The Omnivore's Dilemma, and it is I'm speaking out of turn because I don't know all of the processors in the country, but for small mid-scale meat processing, you can't find a better outfit. I think these guys are the top of the heap.
What makes it?
Well, their capacity to actually survive in an economy where they shouldn't be able to. So they're organic USDA. They were a pretty small, their kill and processing facility. And for them to survive, I mean, it's a fairly tight margin business. For them to survive, they really have to work to the maximum of their capacity. And so when you look at this facility in, and you rationalize the scale of Rancho and how much business is going through there, that's a business that's having a hard time just existing. And then you add on top of that the increasing regulation that's going on. The opportunity for me is that I think is a conversation about how the last 10 years of my life, I've gone from being a yuppie Marin liberal to spending a lot of time with, you know, Joel Salatin and and a lot of libertarian folks. And I, through seeing some of the overreaching branches of government, I've been swayed a lot. But I do believe that, again, the USDA is a necessary element. I don't want to use the other word. But there are when you have a situation like that is requiring so much regulation, and yet as that regulation increases because of our public concerns, the economics don't change as the compliance, the weight of compliance increases. I think that's a place where public-private partnership is probably a good opportunity. And so I'm looking at this thinking, when do we get a co-op type facility or a community supported abattoir, or when is it part of UC Extension's contribution to have a part in maintaining that facility?
So that's an interesting point. Has UC Extension weighed in on this situation?
Yeah. Not officially, I don't.
No, but nobody's weighed in on it officially. It's too raw. But I think one of the things that, in talking with a number of different people over the last 4 or 5 days about this and looking for a solution and, and what does the future look like, I think it's pretty clear because if you look back over however long you want to look, and Leslie brought this up, that there's, as far as we know, there's never been a custom kill beef that's been condemned. And the reason is because we're too small to be able to afford to take that chance. So one of the solutions, and I'm hoping this is the way it goes because it's the fastest and most efficient way to fix the problem, is you can run that facility, and I know this from somebody at the facility, that that facility could very easily run as a custom-only facility. Because once you get rid of the coal cows, you have all that rail space, and they can do further processing there. You also brought up the fact that Golden Gate in Santa Rosa is at capacity. Golden Gate's expanding. They're building a whole new section there, and they're going to offer a lot more services than they have in the past, and that's going to be great. But if we have Rancho or that property, whatever it becomes called in the future, as a custom only for all species, and I'm talking, I hope chicken too. That's a whole other subject, but I hope that that's a piece of
ducks.
It.
Chicken and ducks now have to all leave the county, right?
We have to go to Stockton.
Yeah.
And what about chicken?
Modesto. No.
Oh, Stockton. They stopped doing it.
Yeah, I go down to Modesto. with all the birds. So, but the point is that, that facility exists. The biggest challenge with the facility is the permitting, but it's also the wastewater, and it's all right there. Mm-hmm. So whatever happens with the investigation,
the facility, the foundation is in place there.
Yeah, the facility is viable. Mm-hmm. The wastewater's already been dealt with. The county type permits are all there and grandfathered in. Hopefully, I think, you know, when you talk about apologies and the USDA and what we can do, to me that's up to our elected officials. That's something where if you're talking to Huffington, if you're talking to the Board of Supervisors, if you're talking to people that are running for office in the future, that's their job.
Yeah.
And if they're not going to do their job, then what we can do is hold them accountable.
Yeah, so it's Jared Huffman. Mm. That's his district.
Yeah, I mean, he's the guy that should be on the front page of every newspaper shouting, you know, from the rooftops about this, because we don't have time. You know, I got a business to run. I got meat to cut. I got customers to serve. And I have to find a solution for the future, whether it's me or a group of me's or all of us together. So the elected officials are the ones that need to get the answers and let us go about doing what we can to take advantage of this opportunity and explain to the general public what we're doing here.
Speaking of, you have businesses to run. I've only got about 10 minutes left on the show. So what I would like to hear from you, and I know, Aaron, with you, you're going to be harvesting in summer, so you know it's a ways off for you. But what's next for you? What's going to happen for Victor? We'll just go around the table. What's going to happen with Vic Farmstead Meats? How are you going to keep your customers?
Oh, it's business as usual for us.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I've already met with all my producers, and we've got plans in place to truck the animals where they need to go, the closest place we can.
Okay, so you'll be trucking.
Yep.
Okay. Susan?
Yes, we'll be trucking our USDA animals that go to the markets. I'm exploring other avenues to try to sell more whole animals because we have a lot of direct sales. Mm-hmm. We're only in two small markets, Andy's and Bill's, and otherwise we sell directly to customers, quarters and above. And we're really looking into, you know, the state and the adjustments that clarification that we can make on the legal.
You can do
position.
Ranch. You might be able to do ranch on location.
Well, if people are willing to buy a whole animal, yes, that's what we're working and looking into. So hopefully that can be developed. And then you can eliminate as much stress as possible on the animal and, you know, keep doing what we're working on doing. Mm-hmm. And then otherwise, I've been part of the ranching group and I have some space in my trailer in March and April and that kind of thing. Collaborating is important.
Yeah, and one thing we haven't done is an overview of your business. I know you've had chickens.
We have had chickens. We currently have pork. We're really working on the direct sales of the beef is really our focus. And we've been in business for almost 7 years, and it's going really well. And this has been a really heart-wrenching kind of interruption. And that's okay. We'll go with it, and we'll figure it out and continue to provide wonderful beef.
Mike read my mind. Can people go together and buy a whole cow? I guess they can.
Yes.
That could just, and, you know, what is that dressed weight? What would you be thinking, you know?
Usually 600 is a hanging weight, an average hanging weight.
Okay. Great. And now, Leslie, because I know you do duck. Came to fame with duck eggs.
Right, right. Well, we'll be trucking as well because we want to address the segment of the market that wants retail cuts. They may not want a whole animal or a quarter of an animal. Mm-hmm. So we'll continue to find ways to provide that to our customers.
Mm-hmm. And an overview of your business?
We provide pastured duck. We're certified organic pastures. We do certified organic duck eggs and goat meat, as well as the grass-fed beef.
Right. And you have two kinds of beef, right?
We do Angus crosses, and then we also have Highland cattle.
That's right.
And we had a new baby born yesterday.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes. Really cute.
Oh, good. Good. And do you still have the little mercantile?
We do. We do on-farm sales, farmer's market, Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmer's Market.
And Bodega when it starts up?
And Bodega when it starts up, which is a really nice market. It's small, but it's very good.
Yeah, it's a really great little market.
It is.
And it's SalmonCreekRanch.com?
Yes.
Freestoneranch.com.
Freestoneranch.com. VicMeats.com.
VicFarmMeats.com.
VicFarmMeats. That's why I'm always, you know, having to spend more time on Google than I want. And what are your hours? Now, you're not doing any farm sales now, are you?
You've
all moved to, everything has moved to the community market in the Barlow, correct?
Permit department at the county. I don't do any farm sales anymore. Leave me alone. It's about time for my annual call. No, the farm is just a farm again. And we have, the butcher shop is open Tuesday through Sunday at Community Market from 10 to 7, although I'm usually in there by 8 o'clock or so cutting. There's also a grab-and-go section there in the perishables door where you can get stuff if we're not there. And then we do 7 farmers markets throughout the Bay Area.
And then you also have a special thing, and we have enough time to talk about it, that is benefiting...
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Oh, no. I definitely wanted you to talk about
this.
Thank
you very much.
So tell us about that.
So I got together with Terra Firma Farms and BN Ranch. Many of you have heard, if you saw Christmas piece today in the Press Democrat... a high school classmate of mine, Alex Parada. She has a 4-year-old son, a 6-year-old daughter, and a 43-year-old husband. And back in January, Ezekiel, who goes by EZ, was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer.
What type of cancer do we know?
RMS, I think, it's a bone cancer, I believe, but I'm not sure. I stopped worrying about it at cancer.
Okay.
And tragically, February 2nd, Ron, the father, passed away in his sleep, massive cardiac arrest. So, I mean, you can't even wrap your head around how tragic that is. And so I, you know, kind of wanted to use, there's benefits and dinners and dances and the community, as it does all the time, is rallying to support this family and help them through this terrible time. And I wanted to do something in my place in the world to help out. So we created this program. We called it an Easy Pound of Ground. We have, I've put up 100 pounds of ground beef. Terra Firma's put up 100 pounds of ground beef, and BN Ranch has put up 100 pounds of ground turkey. And we're selling these for $20 a piece. 100% of the money goes to the family. And it's been amazing. I mean, people really are good. We have sold, I think by tonight, we're probably somewhere in around 90 pounds that we've sold in the last week since we started this program. But much more than that has come in just in straight donations. If you go to our Facebook page, Facebook Victorian Farmstead, you'll see a PayPal link there if you want to donate. Anything that's donated there, we'll either give the meat to the family or we just resell another pound so we can keep this going for quite a while. We've raised over, I think, $3,400 in the first week. And so, yeah, any support is much appreciated. It's a real tragedy, but it's another opportunity for the community to rally behind somebody that needs help.
Yeah, it's a great thing that you all are doing. Thank you for thinking of it, and thank you for doing it. Aaron, when you start to have your product available, how will people find you?
I have a little while to figure that out.
Okay.
I'm talking to numerous successful marketing entities out there.
Okay.
So, and I'll have a fairly small harvest. Again, it's a new business. So.
Yeah. And you can always let us know, and we can talk about it again on Mouthful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And until then, I think I'll spend all that spare time I have not marketing, trying to help come up with a community solution to keep
Great.
This going. I think it'll, you know, it's a good conversation.
I love the idea of taking the coal cows out of the picture and then making that a facility for all local.
Absolutely.
That would just be...
That would be ideal.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
A mobile slaughter might be really cool,
too.
Yeah.
They have one in Washington.
And we don't have one here?
It's kind of a little trend. No, we don't.
Oh, I thought...
There's one in Paso Robles, but it's parked, is what I've read recently. But
We've got like 2 minutes left. Okay. Tell us about what a mobile slaughter.
A mobile slaughter is that you can have a USDA mobile slaughter come to a ranch with a USDA person in tow.
Gives me chills. What a brilliant idea.
And actually ranch harvest and then mobily move the carcasses to a USDA facility.
And it's
there are a number all over the country.
Or Washington.
There's one in Washington State. Mm-hmm. There's one in Paso Robles that I think they've struggled with the financial piece.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe a Kickstarter campaign and some
The money. We could put a mobile slaughter unit in for less than $1 million tomorrow. The problem is the wastewater and the county permitting to deal with the water. Again, it comes back to the local officials that need to step up and make some exceptions and come up with some creative solutions.
Now, talk about the wastewater. Tell me, for people who don't know, why are you using so much water? Just explain that real quickly.
It's a messy process.
Okay, so clean up.
Yeah, it's clean up. And that water has to be taken into a holding tank on the mobile unit and then processed later.
Okay.
And so that's what's
in Washington State. They allow the ranchers to handle some of the composting.
Yeah.
They allow them to do the water waste because they do such small quantities on their ranch.
Uh-huh.
They allow them, if they provide a proper cement, grass, or, you know, a proper facility for the actual slaughter, that they trust that the rancher is doing it well, and they go, and the USDA person is right there.
How progressive.
So, yes.
That is really great. And on
back
that
to our
note,
roots.
We are out of time. So let me thank Susan Brady, manager of Freestone Ranch. Thank you for being here. Aaron Lucich, brand new business. Thank you so much for stepping up and being here. Really great. Adam Parks of Victorian Farmstead Meats. Thank you, Adam.
My pleasure.
Can always count on you. Even at the last minute, you will come on. And Leslie Braben of Salmon Creek Ranch. Thank you so much. And thank you for, you know, sort of taking it in hand and sending that letter out. I think it's really helpful for people to read things.
Thank you.
And on that note, thank you for tuning in, and meet me here next week for another yummy episode, and maybe even controversial, on Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, here on KRCB.
Children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
Good cornbread. Listen to what the preacher says.
To the Lord, praises be.